Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, October 7th, 2025. We begin with local news, the cutting board, making sweet cider memories. Visit Fisher Apple Farm and savor fruits and moments of fall by D. Jack Alcuri. There's something so Midwestern about walking through rows of fruit trees clad in plaid patterned flannel, while the crisp, fresh air breathes life itself into your lungs. At the end of the line, a cool, newly pressed apple cider waiting to be savored to its last drop. It's a solid memory. Though the temperature gauge may still be reading 80s, September and October mean apple season, dag nabbit. So join me, won't you? Because this week on the cutting board, we nourish the inner child by visiting an apple farm and making our own apple cider. Bill and Barb Fisher own Fisher Apple Farm in Haworth and sell apples every Saturday later in the season at the downtown Bloomington Farmers Market. They currently have over 500 apple trees with 22 varieties, but some of them are rather unique. Several of their varieties are a product of collaboration between Purdue, Rutgers, and University of Illinois, so they go by PRI, Bill Fisher said. A lot of the names have the PRI letters in them, like Pristine and Williams Pride. The goal of this collaboration, which began in the mid-20th century, was to develop apples that are resistant to certain diseases by cross-breeding apple cultivars with a crabapple strain called Malus floribunda. They do grow more recognizable names like Jonna Gold alongside a familiar-looking Gold Rush that resembles Golden Delicious but are much crispier, Bill Fisher said. It's a cross between a Golden Delicious and a co-op apple from PRI. So this apple is crispy, crunchy, long storing. It literally will store from when we pick it to April or May in refrigeration. The Fishers haven't always been farmers. Even though Bill studied agriculture at Illinois State University, he worked in a lot of different industries, including owning his own garage door repair business before retiring. Barb grew up on a farm, but worked her career as an elementary school teacher. They bought the farm for their son to have a place to stay before converting it into their own home when he left. Transforming the orchards into a full-on production has taken some work, but that's part of the adventure, Barb said. In teaching, the focus is to tell students that you're learning things to be a lifelong learner, she said, and I feel like I'm truly living that out. I'm becoming a lifelong learner. It's pretty much just the two of them doing the bulk of the work on the farm, from pruning to picking, spraying pesticides, and washing the apples. Bill was even building a new walk-in refrigerator in late September. But all the work is worth it, he said. Without being corny, it's kind of a dream come true. The biggest calling is producing food for people, Bill said. On September 23rd, when we visited the farm in Haworth, I bought 1.5 packs of seconds to make cider. Fruit seconds are those less aesthetically pleasing but still good fruits. These are traditionally used for juices. This wasn't my first time making cider this year. In fact, earlier in September, I bought 2.5 bushels of apples from Fisher, yielding 5 gallons of cider that is currently fermenting in my basement. And it would have been easier to press these apples at home as I have a whole setup. I would have gotten more cider and I would have wowed my coworkers. But something else was bugging me. None of us know how much time we have in this world. So when the opportunity presents itself to drive 300 miles to see two of your best friends and their young sons, even if just for a little more than a day, sometimes you have to grab the wheel and go. I have known Alex and Rachel Nealon for 15 years. I met Alex in boot camp. He had the top bunk and I the bottom. We met Rachel when the three of us were stationed in Monterey, California in late 2010. In 2013, Alex and Rachel tied the knot. Around Valentine's Day in 2021, Henry Cole was born. This past Christmas, they welcomed Wesley James, whom I met for the first time this past weekend. Before leaving home, I called Alex and asked if Henry would like to help me make apple cider. Ask him, I'm sure he'd love to, Alex said. Because I didn't bring my apple mill to the Airbnb, we had to use a blender. I cut the apples into small pieces before working in batches to crush and blend half a peck of apples and move the pieces into a mesh bag. The whole time, Henry asking, "Is it really working?" We put the bag into my wooden apple press, which I did bring. Then Alex, Henry, and I pressed the crushed apples to get about half a liter of fresh cider, which was absolutely delicious. The color is a deep caramel and tastes just like apple cider should. Alex and I used some cider to spice a good bourbon, something that I will be doing again. But for dinner, I had some boneless pork chops bought specifically for Henry. I cut those into bite-sized pieces and seared them off in a pan. Then I sweat down some onion and apple slices with a good butter. I added everything back to the pan and deglazed that with apple cider, letting it reduce to a desired thickness. Henry loved this. He even asked for more of my chicken at their first dinner back home. The next morning, Rachel chopped up some of the other apples we had and made pancakes for the boys. And even though I had my camera with me, I didn't take any pictures. I wanted to absorb all of the weekend and spend time with my Navy brother and sister and their sons. It's locked in my heart now. Little Henry cheering as the cider flows into the pitcher, constantly confusing it with the apple vinegar that his grandfather uses. And Wesley, barefoot and bald, propped in his folding chair on the countertop, munching on pieces of apple pancake with his handful of teeth. Sometimes you just need to be there in the moment, because even though we don't like to admit it, we don't really know how many more moments we will have. So we have to make sure that we are filled with as much love, compassion, and care as we can muster. And I'll see you on the next one. And Jack writes, if you're a farmer or a producer and would like to talk with me for this column, call at 309-820-3275. And be sure to check back next time to see what we're chopping up on the cutting board. Caitlin Klepek writes, car strikes coals, starts fire. Vehicle caught fire, driver injuries not life-threatening. Bloomington firefighters spent hours Monday working to extinguish a fire at the Kohl's store in Eastland Mall after authorities reported a car crashed into the building. At 3:58 a.m., Bloomington fire crews were dispatched to 1615 East Empire Street for reports of a car hitting the department store. By 4 a.m., the crews arrived to find a vehicle on fire, partially inside the store, according to a news release from the Bloomington Fire Department. No one was in the car, but investigators determined the fire had spread to inside the store. Additional resources were called in, including a full recall of off-duty firefighters, according to the release. Bryce Jansen, public information officer for Bloomington Police, told the Pantograph officers were also called in to assist. The driver of the crashed vehicle, a teenage girl, was located in the area and taken to a local hospital for injuries that were not considered life-threatening, Jansen said. As of 10 a.m., fire crews remained on the scene. Although no flames were visible from the outside of the store, the department said firefighters were working to put out a fire that had spread in the large, concealed areas along the exterior wall. Access to this part of the building is difficult, requiring extensive use of hand tools and saws on the roof, according to the release. Fire personnel advise residents to stay away from the area Monday morning. The fire remains under investigation by the Bloomington Fire Department, and no further information was immediately available as of Monday. Okay, the top story on the front page is State Moves to Block Troops. Lawsuit, Trump Plan for Guard in Chicago is Unlawful and Dangerous, by Christine Fernando with the AP. Illinois and Chicago filed a lawsuit Monday aiming to stop President Donald Trump's administration from sending hundreds of National Guard troops to the city, just as troops prepared to deploy and hours after a federal judge blocked troops from being sent to Portland, Oregon. The quickly unfolding developments come as the administration portrays the Democrat-led cities as war-ravaged and lawless, and amid Trump's crackdown on the illegal immigration. Officials in both cities have disputed the president's characterizations, saying military intervention is not needed and it's federal involvement that is inflaming the situation. The legal challenge comes after Illinois Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker said some 300 of the state's guard troops were to be federalized and deployed to the nation's third largest city, along with 400 others from Texas. The lawsuit alleges that these advances in President Trump's long-declared, quote, war on Chicago and Illinois are unlawful and dangerous, close quote. Quote, the American people, regardless of where they reside, should not live under the threat of occupation by the United States military, particularly not simply because their city or state leadership has fallen out of a president's favor, the lawsuit says. Pritzker said the potential deployment amounted to Trump's invasion and called on Republican Texas Governor Greg Abbott to block it. Abbott pushed back and said the crackdown was needed to protect federal workers who are in the city as part of the president's increased immigration enforcement. White House spokesperson Abigail Jackson confirmed in a weekend statement that Trump authorized using Illinois National Guard members, citing what she called, quote, ongoing violent riots and lawlessness, close quote, that local leaders have not quelled. In Chicago, the sight of armed Border Patrol agents making arrests near famous landmarks amplified concerns from residents already uneasy after an immigration crackdown that began last month. Agents have targeted immigrant-heavy and largely Latino areas. Protesters have frequently rallied near an immigration facility outside the city, and federal officials reported the arrests of 13 protesters on Friday near the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Processing Facility in Broadview. The Department of Homeland Security acknowledged that federal agents shot a woman Saturday morning on the southwest side of Chicago. A department statement said it happened after Border Patrol agents patrolling the area were rammed by vehicles and boxed in by 10 cars. No law enforcement officers were seriously injured, DHS spokesperson Tricia McLaughlin said. In Portland, U.S. District Judge Karen Emmergut granted a temporary restraining order sought by Oregon and California to block the deployment of guard troops from those states to the city. There has been a sustained and low-level protest outside the Portland ICE facility, but it's been less disruptive than the downtown clashes of 2020 when demonstrations erupted after George Floyd's killing. Emmergut, a first-term Trump appointee, seemed incredulous that the president moved to send National Guard troops to Oregon from neighboring California and then from Texas on Sunday. Quote, aren't defendants simply circumventing my order, she said. Why is this appropriate, close quote. Local officials have suggested that many of the president's claims and social media posts about Portland appear to rely on images from 2020. Under a new mayor, the city has reduced crime and downtown has seen fewer homeless encampments and increased foot traffic. Most violent crime around the U.S. has actually declined in recent years, including in Portland, where a recent report from the Major Cities Chiefs Association found that homicides from January through June decreased by 51% this year as compared to the same period in 2024. Since the start of his second term, Trump has sent or talked about sending troops to 10 cities, including Baltimore, Memphis, Tennessee, the District of Columbia, New Orleans, and the California cities of Oakland, San Francisco, and L.A. A federal judge in September said the administration, quote, willfully broke federal law by deploying guard troops to L.A. over protests about immigration raids. Next is a roundup of top Democrats denounce Trump order. President Donald Trump's administration announced plans to activate 300 Illinois National Guard troops into the Chicago area, followed by troops from the Texas National Guard. As Illinois officials learned of this Sunday night and into Monday morning, several of the state's Democratic leadership spoke against the administration's decision. Here is what they've said. Governor J.B. Pritzker. This evening, President Trump is ordering 400 members of the Texas National Guard for deployments to Illinois, Oregon, and other locations within the United States. No officials from the federal government called me directly to discuss or coordinate. We must now start calling this what it is, Trump's invasion. It started with federal agents. It will soon include deploying federalized members of the Illinois National Guard against our wishes, and it will now involve sending in another state's military troops. I call on Governor Abbott to immediately withdraw any support for this decision and to refuse to coordinate. There is no reason a president should send military troops into a sovereign state without their knowledge, consent, or cooperation. The brave men and women who serve in our National Guards must not be used as political props. This is a moment where every American must speak up and stop the madness. Senator Dick Durbin says, terrorizing families with midnight raids and military troops in our streets is writing a shameful chapter in our nation's history. This president is not intent on fighting crime. He is intent on spreading fear. Senator Tammy Duckworth says, after federalizing the Illinois National Guard against our state's wishes over the weekend, Donald Trump is stretching the limits of presidential authority even further past their breaking point by deploying the Texas National Guard to intimidate Illinoisans in our own communities. Our leaders have not called for this. Our state does not need this. Our National Guardsmen and women did not sign up to police their own neighbors or to be used as political pawns. This is a gross overreach and an egregious abuse of power that pits one sovereign state of our union against another, just so Trump can consolidate his own power at the expense of our constitutional rights. It's another unwarranted, unwanted, and unconstitutional move from Trump as he continues to abuse our military, attack our cities, and intimidate Americans. I join Governor Pritzker in calling on Governor Abbott to withdraw his support and refuse to coordinate as Trump pushes us closer to authoritarianism. This is not something that should be happening in the United States of America. And Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul writes, the American people, regardless of where they reside, should not live under the threat of occupation by the United States military, particularly for the reason that their city or state leadership has fallen out of a president's favor. I am absolutely committed to upholding the Constitution and defending the rule of law, which is why my office is both challenging and seeking an order to stop unlawful National Guard deployment in Illinois. Continuing on the same topic, we have feds ramp up combative tactics. Immigration agents use helicopters and chemical agents by Sophia Tareen with the AP. Storming an apartment complex by helicopter as families slept, deploying chemical agents near a public school, handcuffing a Chicago City Council member at a hospital. Activists, residents, and leaders say increasingly combative tactics used by federal immigration agents are sparking violence and fueling neighborhood tensions in the nation's third largest city. They are the ones that are making it a war zone, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker said Sunday on CNN. They fire tear gas and smoke grenades, and they make it look like it's a war zone. Authorities arrested more than 1,000 immigrants since an immigration crackdown started last month in the Chicago area. The Trump administration also vowed to deploy National Guard troops in its agenda to boost deportations. But U.S. citizens, immigrants with legal status, and children have been among those detained in increasingly brazen and aggressive encounters, which pop up daily across neighborhoods in the city of 2.7 million and its many suburbs. Illinois and Chicago filed a lawsuit Monday aiming to stop President Trump's administration from sending hundreds of National Guard troops to the city, just as troops prepared to deploy and hours after a federal judge blocked their deployment to Portland, Oregon. Activists and residents were taking stock Sunday at an apartment building on Chicago's South Side, where the Department of Homeland Security said 37 immigrants were arrested recently in an operation that raised calls for investigation by Pritzker. While federal agents have mostly focused on immigrant-heavy and Latino enclaves, the operation early Tuesday unfolded in the largely black South Shore neighborhood that's had a small influx of migrants resettled in Chicago while seeking asylum. Agents used unmarked trucks and a helicopter to surround the five-story apartment building. News Nation, which was invited to observe the operation, reported agents rappelled from Black Hawk helicopters. Agents then went door to door, woke up residents, and used zip ties to restrain them. Residents and the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights, which canvassed the area, said those who were zip tied included children and U.S. citizens. Roderick Johnson, a U.S. citizen briefly detained, said agents broke through his door and placed him in zip ties. I asked if they had a warrant, and I asked for a lawyer, the 67-year-old told Chicago Sun-Times. They never brought one. Dixon Romero with Southside Together, an organization that's also been helping residents, said doors were knocked off the hinges. Everyone we talked to didn't feel safe, he said. This is not normal, it's not okay, and it's not right. Pritzker, a two-term Democrat, directed state agencies to investigate claims that children were zip-tied and detained separately from their parents, saying military-style tactics shouldn't be used on children. Several Democratic members of the Illinois congressional delegation met near the site Sunday, calling for an end to these immigration raids. DHS officials said they were targeting connections to the Tren de Aragua gang. Without offering details on arrests or addressing how children were treated, DHS said some of the target subjects are believed to have been involved in drug trafficking and distribution, weapons crimes, and immigration violators. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem on Saturday posted heavily edited video clips of the operation to social media showing agents blasting through doors, helicopters, and adults in zip ties, but music played over most of the roughly one-minute video. Agency officials did not return a message left on Sunday. Brandon Lee with ICIRR said while some residents were placed on ankle monitors, others remain unaccounted for. Meanwhile, the use of chemical agents has become more frequent and visible in the past week. Used initially to manage protesters, agents used it this week on city streets and during immigration operations, according to ICIRR. An emergency hotline to report immigrant agent sightings topped 800 calls on Friday, the same day activists said agents threw a canister of a chemical near a school in the city's Logan Square neighborhood. The activity in the Northwest Side neighborhood prompted nearby Funston Elementary School to hold recess indoors. The same day, Chicago Alderman Jesse Fuentes was placed in handcuffs at a hospital. She said she asked agents to show a warrant for a person who'd broken his leg while chased by ICE agents, who then transported him to the emergency room. ICE acted like an invading army in our neighborhood, said State Representative Lillian Jimenez, a Democrat. Helicopters hovered over our homes, terrifying families and disturbing the peace of our community. These shameful and lawless actions are not only a violation of constitutional rights, but of our most basic liberty, the right to live free from persecution and fear. Immigration agents shot a woman they allege was armed and tried to run them over after agents were boxed in by 10 cars. She and another person were charged Sunday with forcibly assaulting, impeding, and interfering with a federal law enforcement officer. However, activists said immigration agents caused the multi-vehicle crash and detained the woman, who is a U.S. citizen. Noem has defended the aggressive tactics, calling the mission treacherous to agents and alleging threats on officers' lives. Quote, it's an extremely dangerous situation, she said Sunday on the Fox and Friends weekend show. Leaders of a Chicago suburb that's home to an immigration processing center have taken their fight against federal agents to court. The village of Broadview has become a front line in the immigration operation. The center in the community of 8,000 people is where immigrants are processed for detention or deportation. Protests outside have become tense with near daily arrests. Civil rights organizations have blasted aggressive tactics by agents, while village officials have launched 3 separate criminal investigations against federal agents. City officials demanded the federal government remove an 8-foot fence they say was illegally put up outside the facility. They filed a federal lawsuit Friday seeking a temporary restraining order and the immediate removal of the fence that they say blocks fire access. The fence also constitutes an immediate public safety hazard, the lawsuit said. Changing gears, but still with the U.S. government, we have shutdown threatens food aid via WIC. Funding cut off for 6 million mothers and kids by Maura Ballingit and Janelle Alicia. A food aid program that helps more than 6 million low-income mothers and young children will run out of federal money within 2 weeks unless the government shutdown ends, forcing states to use their own money to keep it afloat or risk it shutting down, experts say. The $8 billion Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, also known as WIC, provides vouchers to buy infant formula as well as fresh fruits and vegetables, low-fat milk, and other healthy staples that are often out of financial reach for low-income households. The shutdown, which began Wednesday, coincided with the beginning of a new fiscal year, meaning programs like WIC, which rely on annual infusions from the federal government, are almost out of money. The program is being kept afloat by a $150 million contingency fund, but experts say it could run dry quickly. After that, states could step in to pay for the program and seek reimbursement when a budget finally passes, but not all states say they can afford to do so. We feel good about 1 to 2 weeks, said Allie Hard, policy director for the National WIC Association. After that, we are very worried. Taylor Moyer, a mother of 3 who recently separated from her husband, has been receiving WIC since her first son was born 9 years ago. She said the program allowed her to feed her children nutritious food, then calorie-dense processed options. The WIC program, which has long had bipartisan support, aids those who are pregnant, mothers, and children under age 5. Research tied it to lower infant mortality, healthier birth weights, higher immunization rates, and better academic outcomes for children who participate. Almost half of those who are eligible don't enroll, often because they think they don't qualify or they can't reach a WIC office. Some Republican lawmakers want to cut WIC, which is targeted for elimination in Project 2025, the influential policy blueprint authored by the man who's now President Donald Trump's budget chief. Trump's budget request and the spending plan, backed by House Republicans, would not fully fund the program. They also want to cut funding for families to buy fresh fruits and vegetables. And that concludes the reading of Part 1 of the Pantograph for Tuesday, October 7th, 2025. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with Part 2.